Blog Talk Radio.
This program contains... This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Basically, the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on major for the enemy. They have a policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media. Just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say fuck them. That's straight from Mike P.
Jump on your bike, let's hit the road. Come on. Fuck the 5-0, man, we out of control. Hey. I'm a bad motherfucker, riding through the night. Hey. A 50 motherfucker and I love to fight. Picture me rolling on my chopper on red. No love for the other side, no need to be friends. Hit the gas, homie, you gotta keep on pushing. Out and out, chin, check the dose, and need to ask for the ticket. That's a ticket, man, I ain't gon' pay. Another dude, 30 days, locked up in CJ. Twist the throttle, let's get the rolling. My drag bikes on my bike, get the blowin'. A thug motherfucker street calling me. Like a mom calls the kids when it's time to eat. Don't approach me, homie, like the shit all good. I don't like half the motherfuckers that live in my hood. I'm a 10-year rollin' to the bone. Put 10 in the clip and 1 in the hole. Fuck what you heard, homie, I'ma always hit a bar. My homeboys might rubble, but we never ever fall. At the end of the day, we can always stand tall. The gov don't like me, oh fucking well. I guess you can call me the angel from hell.
I'd like you to take people back to where Attica 7 started. You know, realizing for the first time that you may never see daylight again.
Yeah.
And what your emotions were like when you were putting these songs down on paper and how you got that inspiration. Okay?
Yeah, visualize yourself in a cell, 6x8, 8x12, whatever it is. You've just been ripped out of society with a possibility of never having a chance to ever see your family again outside of a cell somewhere or a visiting area in a prison while you're either shackled behind glass or under guard. And you're not expecting any of this to happen. It just happens. And all of a sudden, everything you've held dear, everything that you love is out of your reach. You know, it changes the way you think about things. It changes the way you think about what you do. Instead of just going out randomly and doing what you feel like doing, it makes you think before you do those things with those large consequences. And when you're in a motorcycle club, you're going to pay twice the consequence, maybe three times, maybe four times of what the average person is going to pay for any action that you may take, or even a reaction to being attacked yourself. You become not the victim, but the perpetrator defending yourself because you're in a motorcycle club. So you have to think about all these things every day. It's like walking on the edge of a razor blade. And when you're doing your time, it's like walking on the edge of a razor blade the whole time you're in, because you don't want to lose your good time, but you can't be weak. So you have to do whatever you got to do to survive honorably while you're on the inside. Then when I got sentenced after being in over 21 months in MDCLA, they shipped me around a little bit, put me in the hole in a few other places waiting for my paperwork to come through, and then I got sent up to Oregon to a prison up there, and while I was up there, I was working out in the yard at least 5 days a week. And I rediscovered music totally by accident. I wasn't even into music. I knew how to play guitar. I'd played since I was 9. Took lessons from the time I was 9 till the time I was 15. Learned how to read, write music, finger picking, classical, the whole deal. But then I got out of it, got into motorcycles, and just picked up the guitar every once in a while, sometimes not for years. But it was in my head. The structure of music, the feeling, it was all there. So I don't know what happened, but after being up there for a few years, I was walking past this room where they did a lot of band rehearsals and the band program for inmates, and I just got inspired to start playing. And I joined a blues band, actually a blues rock band, and I said, I'll come in, I'll play bass, guitar, I don't care. So they said, all right, come in and play bass. So I came in, the bass player hadn't gone home yet that I was replacing, so I played guitar, and they said, no, we want to keep you on the guitar. So I said, all right, you mind if I write some songs? They said, yes. So I wrote one song the next week, and another song the next week, and I was writing new music every week. Then they had a riot up there, and they sent me to Texas. And when I got to Texas, I took a whole portfolio of my music with me, and 3 days after I got out of the hole up there, I was playing a concert in front of all the inmates. It was like 1,800 people in that yard. We were playing all my music. But that's because that was a blues, like a heavy blues. That's what I started writing was blues originally, kind of a blues rock, really really heavily distorted. And then I gravitated towards down-tuned music while I was there. I did a lot of covers and my own music for quite a while, played at all the holidays. Then I think I wrote 32 songs over there. I've got all of them still. Everything in the same paper I wrote it on. And I got so into it that I just decided when I get out, that's going to be my goal. I'm going to build a big band around good musicians, solid musicians, not a bar band, not a cover band, and it's just evolving into what I wanted it to be.
What would you say is your favorite Attica 7 song?
That's hard to say, but Devil's Daughter, Serial Killer, All or Nothing, Lockdown. I can keep going, man. It ended up being the whole damn album almost.
I got to agree with you with that. I mean, there's not a bad song on the CD. But can you take us back to where you were physically and mentally when you wrote one of these songs and what was going through your mind there?
When I wrote Lockdown, I was in a cell, and if you listen to the lyrics in Lockdown, it's an inmate, and it's definitely a serious prison song. Another one, No Redemption, wearing a number on your chest, having eyes in the back of your head, because that was the thing. You always had a number on, and you had to have eyes in the back of your head all the time.
Do you feel that had you not went to prison, that you would be where you're at today musically?
If I didn't go to prison, Attica 7 wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be playing music. It completely changed my life when I went in there. I redirected my thinking, and I'm glad. I love the music. I love what I'm doing. I love what I'm doing with my business, building these bikes. I love the music even more. And the TV, the different things that I'm into now, I mean, I'm enjoying every day. That's one thing I can say is out of that experience, when I finally did get out, I appreciate every day. Even a bad day is a great day.
One of the things that I noticed that when I went out to cover the Upward Tour is after I saw your band, there was an it factor, a magic, a something that that people can relate to and forget about problems and stuff like that with your music. And I fully believe that people are going to jump into your genre from others and come together with your music. What do you feel is the reason for that?
I think one of the reasons that that our music is so universal, it's not just one little niche like metal or just rock or something else. It draws people from all different genres because there is a little blues influence in there. There's the rock influence. There's the metal influence. And every riff that's in there was written with feeling. I mean, when I write riffs for music, I don't just write riffs to write riffs. I write riffs that I feel, hooks that I feel. And it's got to really, like, make the hair stand up on the back of your neck kind of a thing. You know, it's like I know when I got those sweet spots in the groove, and that's what I incorporate into my choruses, into my verses, the breakdowns. I try to get the whole thing woven together. So it's a feeling that you have. It's not just music. It's you feel the music, and that's important. You got to feel those hooks. That's what the hooks are, you know. And the same with the lyrics. When I write lyrics, 90% of the time, I write the lyrics after I've done all the riffs and the choruses, everything, they fall together. But I start out with the first line. First line is always the hardest line when I write, because it sets the pace for everything to follow. And then it just starts flowing like water. And it's very, it's a little bit of poetry, but it always tells a story almost every time. I don't want to just write ridiculous sentences, you know, just to fill the void with vocals. You know, I want it to tell a story. If you wrote it as poetry or just as a story, it has a beginning and an end usually.
My photography and my video is I try to look at things as a voyeur in letting people see the world through my camera. I see that same thing in your music. I mean, people are able to come into where you were and experience that, or, you know, relate things to their lives. What's your trick to letting people see that?
Well, like in the song Serial Killer, I'm not a killer. I've never killed anybody. But just as when you're an actor, you know, you act, you kill people in the movie, that doesn't make you a killer. But you have to be into that part. You have to become that person. And when I wrote that song, I really had to get deep into the character of this serial killer that was telling the story in his lyrics. And if you listen to the lyrics in that song, that's what it is. This is a guy that he's a killer. He doesn't necessarily want to be a killer. He can't help it. The demons take over, and he does what he does. It's not like he's looking for this to happen. It happens, and he tells it as the story comes out. When you're listening to the song, it's very evident that he's almost a victim of himself.
Wow. See, and I think that's the magic that all your songs have is you let people see it from the real thing. I mean, the real deal. The you know, what's in the mind of a serial killer. I mean, who knows that?
Yeah, I tell you, I've been in some places, I've been around some people that were that kind of people, and it emanates out of some of them. It just emanates so bad. I mean, you can feel it before they even say anything. And then there's others that are like multiple personality type of people. They would be the nicest people in the world, but the other side of them is the homicidal side that flips. And it's like they're the most dangerous ones because they're a chameleon. And you can never trust people like that. But I've been in situations with a lot of people that are that type of people, both those kind of killers. And to try to put your mind in that place is, it takes a minute to get there. And if you want to write something that's believable with that feeling, you have to get your mind there. You have to be that person to do it.
That's a scary thing to attempt to get into a place like that and get out.
Yeah, I tell you, I remember specifically when I did that. And I remember the feeling I had, and it wasn't a good feeling, let me tell you. I wouldn't be proud to think like that on a daily basis, let me tell you.
Well, there's not too many writers that are going to be able to come up with the music that you have, and again, I think that's probably the biggest part of listening to your CD that's out right now, that it's just every song on there. I mean, I instantly bought the CD, and there's not a song on there I don't like.
we've got a really, really good team of players right now. Without even having a bunch of rehearsals under our belt, we can go out and play shows, and we did. And a lot of the time you take players, you're going to have to play at least 7, 8, 9 rehearsals together before you're tight enough to go out in public. We didn't even need to do that in this case.
Yeah, I saw you guys on your second show, and I was hooked right then and there. Like I said, I think I even really got in trouble because I didn't photograph any other bands, but you guys. But it pretty much paid off, and I think the other thing I liked about Attica 7 is that it was so cool to see you guys after you perform. You're at the merch booth, and you're there till the time you guys leave. I mean, you were there with a solid line of fans taking pictures and signing autographs. And I mean, you, to me, that's a true rock star. I mean, you were passionate. It's like you guys, if you could afford it, would go out there and play for free, you know, just to play that music. I mean, that's kind of what I got from that.
Yeah, if it was just about the money, we would have quit doing this a long time ago. I would have quit way before I hooked up with the lineup that we have now. Money has nothing to do with it. And the fans, they're the most important, and we really appreciate it when we see these fans that come from 100 miles away or more to see the show. You know, stadium hotels, and I mean, that's really true fans, and we're going to do everything we can to make that experience as good as we can for them. And when the show's over with, we're going to spend time with them. We're going to sign autographs, give them merch, you know, sell them merch, give them merch, everything. You know, we're going to make the experience as best we can for them.
It was funny watching you guys, you know, have fun with this, where you were throwing out the shot glasses and people were catching them as they're going by. And,
yeah.
And, you know, the parts that a lot of the fans don't get an opportunity to see, like, well, you know, the rock star life where you're living in truck stops and things like that. But and you even had on your tour manager, Al, wasn't there a couple of episodes with him where some funny things happened there with truck stops?
There's episodes with Al all the time. I have fun with him daily, man. He's great entertainment. Yeah, I left him at least one truck stop. I actually sent him out to check the rear tire one time, and while he was out there, I locked the door, drove off, and left him at the truck stop.
Hey, Al, come up here, will ya? What's up, Rusty?
I think that rear tire's low, man. Would you check that back, the tag axle?
Yeah, no problem.
All right, man, thanks.
Hey, shut that door when you get out, will ya?
We're gonna leave his ass again, man. I gotta lock this door.
Another time at another truck stop, he was outside doing whatever, fueling or something. I took off, and he actually ran, jumped up on the mirror in the bumper and held onto the thing, so I couldn't get rid of him that time. I had to stop and let him in. And I think at another venue, we were backing out, and I had him help back the bus out. He was guiding me as soon as I got out and took off. And I heard I had the door open still while I was driving. It sounded like Fred Flintstone trying to catch the bus with those heavy feet. I said, damn, this guy can run, man. I had no clue he could run like that. I finally let him in that time, too. He deserved it. You know, he had to run quite a ways, you know. So.
You know, musically or through life in itself, if you could go back in time and change something, what would you change?
You know, it's funny because you say that, like, you know, I've thought about this many times. I would love to change the mistakes I made that sent me to prison. But then I think if I changed what sent me to prison last time, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. I'd be going in a whole other direction. So I took a very bad experience that happened to me in 1999, and I turned it into a good thing. I took everything I had to work with and flipped it. And because of that, I'm so happy with everything I'm doing, I don't want to change that. And I would have to take that back, because there's really not much that I regret since I've been released. it's all been a pretty good trip.
Your bike building, I mean, this shop is, I mean, you're sitting in front of an $80,000 yeah. bike right there, and your bikes are amazing. Where is that going to go with Attica 7, you know, taking off?
You know, I look at what I have going on here like a triangle. It's like the devil's triangle. I've got Illusion, I've got the music, and I've got the TV. And it's all interlinked, and they all work for each other. So what one does pulls the other up, and they're all connected all the time. And I love it. It's a great cross-promotional type of a thing. Personal branding, bands brand, bikes brand, everything's doing well. So the better the music does, I think the better the bike business will do.
And the TV, works. Sons of Anarchy, that's a huge show. I mean, how did that happen?
You know, it's just that was luck. You know, Kurt Sutter's a great guy. I really like him. He started that show 5 years ago. And he's a smart guy. He went out and did his homework. He came by here. He's visited many Hell's Angels. He wanted to go to the top of the food chain and learn about clubs, and he did. And it's a drama. You know, it's not real, but it can be real. If you're going to be entertaining, you have to be dramatic. You have to have a lot of that stuff going on. That's what people need to not lose focus of. You know, it's a fantasy, but it's great. You know, but he did a lot of work in reality so that he could have the most realistic of fantasies. So, and look at it. It's a cult following, man. The thing's crazy. It's over 5 million people regularly watching this. I'm honored to be part of it.
I've had the incredible fortune to travel with you guys on the road for what seems to be months, but it's only been a couple weeks.
with you wear on us a lot. It does. It seems like yours to me, you know what I mean?
I don't make too many mistakes, but the ones I do make are pretty big, so.
Oh, like leaving me in a truck stop? Yeah, that was a good one. At 4 in the morning, I think it was.
Yeah, it was pretty cold,
oh,
too.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I felt pretty
I'm
bad.
I'm glad I had my phone with me. That's all I could say. Or you guys would have been all the way to L.A. before you figured it
out. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think we're going to put footage of that up there, so. But one of the things that I noticed is that everything that you do, whether you're driving a bus or orchestrating the band and your organizational skills and your leadership skills and when we go places, like last night, the Rainbow, after you played at the Key Club, I mean, they closed the place down, but you and your few select friends were allowed to stay. Something about you is just you know, people love. You know, what do you think that is?
I just try to treat everybody the way that I want to be treated. And I look at people, you know, and I give them the equal respect that they deserve. And there's so many people out there that feel entitled to take. You know what I mean? And I hate that. Nobody's entitled like that. You should treat everybody the way that you want to be treated. Because when somebody treats you bad with disrespect, you're not happy. And the people you treat bad feel the same way. It's no different. Nobody's entitled to treat anybody bad that doesn't deserve it, you know? So treat people the way they deserve to be treated, you know? And people will appreciate that. That's all. Just being fair, man. Consequences are the most important thing to think about. Everybody, the action that you do, whether it be good or bad, always has consequences. If you do negative actions, there's negative consequences. The bigger the action, the bigger the consequence. And those consequences don't go away. The action takes 2 seconds. We're all capable of all types of violence, all types of good, all types of bad. Anybody, I mean, from the smallest person, it doesn't matter your size. It matters your will to do it. And there's a lot of people out there, and they say, I don't care. I don't give a fuck. Well, you know what? You're going to care when you get nailed. You're going to care when you pay those consequences, because all this stuff out here, if you've never done time, been locked away in cells for a long time, you have no idea the consequence. And the people that have done it and say, oh, it ain't shit, well, I don't even fuck those guys. Their opinion doesn't matter anyway. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. What's it like being in a little cell, solitary?
You know, you get used to it. I'm sad to say, but you'd have to. If you don't get used to it, you're not going to survive. You're going to go nuts. People are adaptable. You can do just about anything, and over time, somebody's going to be adapting to whatever it is, you know, whether it be torture. In this day and age, there's not physical torture, but they've refined mental torture to a fine art. And if you've got the government pissed off at you, they have many ways to mentally break you down, and they'll try, you know. And if you're strong, you won't be broke down, but you're not going to have a good time while they're trying.
Absolutely. Attica 7, it's www.attica7.com. We got some great stuff coming up in the future, you think, here?
Yeah, I'm real excited about what's going on right now. I don't want to get into the details because it hasn't happened yet, and it's not good to talk about things that haven't happened yet with certainty, but we've got some good things coming up in 2013. I think you guys will be seeing us in many places.
Okay, so right now your fans can get CD on your website.
They can go to our website. They can go to iTunes, Amazon. I think FYE or FYI, one of those stores. Best Buy.
Best Buy?
Yeah.
All right. And merchandise, shirts, things like that?
You got shirts, CDs, hats, posters, and the stuff's growing. You know, it's kind of in the infancy right now.
Music videos on the coming out?
Yeah, we do have one music video for Serial Killer that's done right now. I don't know if we're going to re-edit it. It's a good video, but I want to have a great video. So we'll see what happens there. We have plans for a series of videos coming up here within the next 2 to 3 months.
Fantastic. All right. Well, the fans are going to be in for a treat. I mean, like I said, I've been fortunate enough to travel with you guys, and you are my ultimate favorite. I've listened to a lot of bands, been with a lot of bands, but when people ask me what was your favorite tour, I'm going to have to say Attica 7.
Right on, man. You want me to pay you now? Well, I left my wallet.
Check would be fine.
My
wallet's
at home, sorry, man.
Actually, I was thinking about a new bike. I mean, that one behind you looks pretty
what?
Good.
What?
So, a new bike.
What?
Bike.
I can't hear you. What?
Motorcycle.
Huh? I can't hear you. I've been playing so much, I can't hear.
That thing behind you lit up really
good.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
My sight's getting messed up too, man. I gotta start getting rough.
Yeah. All right.
I'm Rusty Coons with the band Attica 7, and you've been watching Rock Biz Magazine.
Yeah. Great. We're out. That's a wrap. Thank you very much, sir.
Breakfast, and then get ready and do our show.
God.
God. Like, how do you keep it all straight? Like, do you sleep at all? No.
I do, but it's like I get little bits of sleep. You know, it's like sometimes you get really tired, but if you take like a cat nap, you're refreshed.
And you guys tore it up on the stage this afternoon, too. It's fantastic. But, yeah, it's absolutely phenomenal. And, I mean, what...
One of my guitars broke a string during the set. We switched it out. I faked it. And then the second one, he gave me the top E was out of tune.
Well, you faked it well.
Yeah. But I'm looking at the guy. He's wearing a Bumblebee suit. That's my guitar tech. I said, could you pay a little more attention to my strings and a little less to the... That's funny. I actually encourage him to be that, you know. So I was going to, if there weren't any other problems, I was going to throw the Bumblebee out into the pit and have everybody chase him.
That could have worked, too.
Yeah.
That would have been an exciting mayhem event.
He used to work for Dimebag, and they did that to him.
Oh, God.
And he had a Bumblebee outfit back then. They threw him out in the pit, and he got beat up.
Oh, God. I'm not surprised coming out of Pantera's camp that that
I love that kind of stuff, you know.
It keeps it interesting and exciting. Like, it's rock and roll, man.
Yeah, before the show, I was looking at the tech up there. He's getting everything ready, and he's wearing a Bumblebee outfit, and I thought it was great, you know.
So, I mean, other than being incredibly busy, how has your mayhem experience been so far?
I'm loving it. You know, it's great. We're hitting a lot of major music markets across the United States. I think the tour has 26 stops, one stop in Canada, which we skipped. It's just not worth the hassle for me to go up there and go through all the legal wrangling, for one show. And we've got incredible fans all across the states where we've appeared at. And we really appreciate that. It's not about the money, it's about building our fan base. So we've actually teamed up with Mayhem and Mayhem and Revolver Magazine to give away downloads of our whole album for free. So right now, for a limited time, you can go on to the Revolver Mag website online and you can download our whole album free.
Do you think that's the best way to kind of spread the message? I mean, that's the way so many people are sharing music now anyway.
Yeah, I mean, people steal it anyway, but the thing is, it's a lot of people would not give their album away like that. We don't care about that. When we do touring, we offset the costs with all the sales on the merch and all the other things, the money we make. So we're okay. You know what I mean? And we're not looking to make money off the music. We would rather spread it.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's, I think a lot of bands share your sentiments, like, on that, because they just want people to hear them and know that somebody is paying attention, definitely.
Yeah, it's like we get, every time we come to a place we haven't been, like today here, the fans say, wow, man, I just discovered you guys. I love you guys, you know, and that's what we want to hear.
So are there any bands that you've been able to check out at Mayhem?
Checked out pretty much all of them. Yeah, there's a lot of good talent here, man. Really good bands from one end of the spectrum to the other.
What's next for you guys after Mayhem?
Well, we're doing some Uproar dates, Rockstar Energy Uproar. And
good tour, too. Long of them.
Yeah, we've done it before. West Coast last year, and we're going to be doing the radio shows, not the whole tour, I don't think. And then other than that, we're still working on the bookings and stuff that'll be happening.
What can you share with us about any new music, new albums?
We have two new, brand new songs that we're actually playing on the tour, and we're actually giving some of those away to the people that are here that are seeing us live, but we're not going to distribute those through the online promotion, because those will probably end up in the next album or EP. And what we've done is we've changed the lineup a little in the band. We've got Ira Black on the second guitar, and he's a really renowned shredder, and me and him blend our styles together really. It's really unique.
It's good when you have that chemistry on stage. It's like very, very apparent.
Yeah.
today. And now what it's done is it's really cool because we're evolving to another kind of a feel with our music, which is cool. I always like doing that, you know. And so we brought a whole nother flavor to it. It's kind of like we took a car that was really fast and now we put a supercharger on it. So
it's good that you guys aren't afraid to evolve. I think any band that gets stuck in a box, like, it becomes very monotonous to them, you know, and it's always good to hear something different.
Yeah, definitely. I'm always down for change. I'm always down for going forward and changing it up, making it interesting, man. So we're having a lot of fun with it. And the direction of the music, we don't even know where it's going to end up because we've got so many ideas of things we want to do.
When do you guys find time to write and get together for that?
Kind of funny. We go through, like, phases where we're really writing and doing a lot of rehearsing, and then we go through times when we're just kind of like on a hiatus from that. We're dealing with all the business stuff. Right now we're kind of in a writing mode. We were before we came on tour also. So what we're going to do is when we get back, we've already got some stuff that's being mixed right now while we're gone that we just did another new one. And we've got some other ones that we haven't recorded yet that we'll finish up. So kind of we're in that mode right now. Is that going to change? I doubt it. You know, I think we're going to write some stuff for a while.
That's good. So on a personal level, I look at music as a universal language we can all speak and understand. What do you hope your music will say to listeners? Is there a certain emotion you hope it'll invoke?
You know, it's kind of a two-pronged thing that if you listen to the lyrics on a lot of the stuff, the lyrics are pretty heavy, and that's just metal, you know, that's why the lyrics are that way, just like country's country, you know, and metal's metal, that's why the lyrics are heavy lyrics like that, but the feeling you get with me is when I write these songs, I have a feeling when I'm writing the riffs on the fretboard, there's sweet spots, I call it. And when you hit riffs, it hit those sweet spots, and it really, it brings a feeling in you to the surface. And that's what I base them on. Usually 90% of the songs I will write the riffs first, and once we get those down, then we do the lyrics.
So I'm sure the creative process is just as therapeutic to you as an artist as it is to the listener that's hearing it also.
Oh, yeah, it feels good. You're creating something that you really love. You're doing it your way, and it's like, you know, it's your creation, you know. So, yeah, it is therapeutic.
I mean, even for you personally, you get to pursue, like, all three loves here, so that's awesome.
Now, that, I feel real fortunate. I'll tell you, it's so great to be able to do three different jobs that you love. You know, and it's really hectic and busy a lot of the time, but I don't care, man. It's worth it. I love it.
I personally feel life is too short to not do what you enjoy doing, and, like, it's awesome to witness people that are able to blend all those things together.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, you're blessed when you can have this kind of a situation where you're really busy doing things you love to do.
So other than trying to record and do anything, are there any other touring plans for After Mayhem?
Well, you know, we have the Uproar I told you about, and we're going to be working on some stuff after that. We haven't solidified that.
Awesome. That's great. So what's one of the craziest things you've witnessed on Mayhem so far?
My bus driving by itself at 75 miles an hour down the interstate while I went to get
the refrigerator. Wow, how did that occur?
I've got a video of it if you want to see it.
That's kind of interesting.
go to Attica7 Facebook and you'll see it. Funny. Yeah.
Well, speaking of social media, how have you guys, like, embraced that as a tool and an asset? I mean, it's certainly not the way it used to be. I mean, that's...
No, it's totally different. We're totally into it. You know, we've got the Twitter, we've got the Facebook stuff, we've got the Instagram and the website and all that. That's
Fans love it. Good.
Yeah, man, it's interactive. People are right there. People get on there, you know, yeah, I was just at that show, and they send in their videos like we had. So I'll tell you, there is two things that come to mind now that we're talking about the fans. There was a guy in a wheelchair at one of our shows. I think it was Mountain View, California, by Frisco. And he was in the mosh pit, and he got knocked out of his wheelchair. So the people in the mosh pit picked him up, helped him get back in his chair, and then they hoisted him above their head, and they crowd surfed him toward the stage, and then they kept chanting in unison, on the stage, on the stage. And there's video of this on YouTube. It's really cool. And they handed the guy to us on stage, and he stayed on stage for the rest of the set. That was pretty cool. You
can imagine what your reaction would be to, like, say that, yeah, you're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, we said, let him on, you know, and we got him on, and the guy was a full metal head, you know, and he was excited as hell. It was probably one of the best days of his life.
Oh, I can only imagine. That's so exciting. But
another thing that happened just a few days ago, we were in Hartford, Connecticut, and we did a song called Devil's Daughter. So Evan gets all the girls and says, hey, this is about all you evil, nasty girls that cause us all to do crazy stuff, you know? He said, I want you to open up the biggest mosh pit you can and just everybody out, all the guys out of there, and just the girls going in there. And we had a big metal mosh pit of women. Yeah.
I think that's the first.
Great.
I think that's the first.
You go look at that on the website, you'll see us on there on the Facebook for sure. And there's a big cloud of dust, man. They were moving.
Right, the girls can throw down just as well as the guys in the pit. So.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking a few minutes to speak with me. I appreciate it. We certainly look for more to come from you guys. Definitely keep us posted on new music and everything, and can't wait for new season of Sons of Anarchy to start soon.
Watch season 6. It's going to be fun. Oh, yeah. All right. Thank you.
SuperSkaten.com. Here we are, Carlos Reale. We're Attica 7. We have Evan over here. Of course, we have Rusty. Thank you so much, guys, for joining us over here. I really appreciate giving us a little of your time and letting us bug you with a few questions. You're touring the Mayhem Fest, Still on the Blood of My Enemies album. Came out last year in July. You were called up, I guess, latest edition, if you will, but that's a good thing. How has it been since the album came out as far as fan reception of the band and the album?
Well, I think it's been the fan response has been incredible. The album got some really great reviews, but the record label that put the album out had some problems, and they really never followed up with promoting the album, so we've kind of just taken it into our own hands and decided we were just going to get on the road and bring the album to the people, like, live. The crowd response, man, has just been incredible. Like, the truth of the matter is very few people actually know our music because we are the newest band on the tour, essentially. Not just the newest edition, but we're the newest band on the tour. We just put out our first album not even a year ago. And that album's barely out.
Yeah, well, there's a bunch of bands who actually have their first album coming up, you know, a few weeks, so... You know, you guys are not down there as the newest, if you will.
Those bands have been playing.
Yeah, that's true.
Playing longer than we have.
That's true.
We are the newest band. We do the math. We never lie to you, SuperSkaten.
No, I know.
But man, the crowd response, this is why we do this, man. The crowd's jumping and they're fist pumping and they're head banging and they're mosh pitting and they're circle pitting and they're doing everything that lets us know we're connecting with them, and that's why we're here.
Anything in the works as far as new material so far?
Yeah.
We actually do have some new stuff that we've written recently. We're playing a little bit of it on the tour now.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yes. And we've got other stuff that we actually have a partial recording, you know, done on, and we're working on some other ones that we haven't started recording yet. So we're in songwriting mode right now. You know how you got to feel it? Well, we're feeling it right now. So.
And how many brand new songs in the set list right now for the festival?
On the set list, too, we got two brand new ones.
Two?
Yeah. We're only playing four songs live.
Yeah.
Because we got a 25-minute set, and our songs are like 5 minutes. You know, so we're playing like 4 or 5 minute songs, and we're playing, and, you know, take a chance to interact with the crowd a little bit. We try to, like, not be forcing it in there, try to fit the fifth song. Okay, yeah, hurry up, here we go. You know, it's not metal, it's a rush, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And it's cool you're giving the fans, you know, some good treats, some new treats to look forward to.
I'll tell you what, playing the brand new stuff, man, people react to it, man. So that's how we can test the songs. I know they're good. If it makes the people move, it's good.
What's your rendition of the new material? Because we're stuck here. We've been stuck here in the stand all day long. We weren't able to check you guys out. But
The new material, there's two songs we're playing on this tour. One is called Darkness, which is just like this so heavy and it's a riff. It's a masterful riff, you know. It's just so heavy, and it's got super melodic chorus. You know, one part reminds me of, like, Old Slayer, one part reminds me of Dio. You know, we're metalheads.
All in one song, huh?
And the other song we're doing is called Dance of the Dead. And, man, you know, that incorporates everything we're into, man, from Sabbath to just melodic, you know, it's got some real heavy riffing. It sounds like stuff I wrote in the past, and it's got stuff that sounds new and fresh. Rusty does all these finger-picking things that inspires all my melodic vocals, and we just kind of play off each other, you know.
And related to the band, can you give us a little bit of the history of the band? You know, how did it happen? Did it come about? Did you guys meet and decided to do this?
I get tired of telling this one.
I'm sure.
We'll do the short version.
Yeah.
It started with Rusty in prison.
Yeah, you know what? I learned how to read and write music between 9 and 14 or 15.
Okay.
Took lessons. I learned classical finger picking, reading and writing music. Actually, not tab. I mean, really reading and writing. And song structure. But I got into dirt bikes. Then I got into Harley Davidsons when I was 19. And I set all that aside, and I still played, but I didn't play much. And in 1999, I went to prison for a while. I got an 8-year sentence with the feds. And I got re-inspired to start playing again while I was in there. And it was by accident. I had no plans to play music. And I wrote 32 songs while I was in there. And I redirected my objectives in life.
Yeah.
I decided when I get out, I wanted to build a band that was
you know, the top players like a Skit, and not be a cover band, not be a bar band. And, you know, I started out when I was in prison doing concerts for the inmates, playing covers, and then
doing
some
the blues,
of those,
blues band, right?
It was blues and rock, and then it slowly
transferred.
I started doing drop
and fucking Ryan and one of them. He just went crazy, man.
I think the prison time metalized him.
Yeah.
I mean, he taught himself in a vacuum because he didn't have anybody there to say, hey, you tune it down, you play the heavy chords. He just had these songs, and the timing was just perfect because, like, I had, you know, been the guy who founded Biohazard out of high school, 20 years. I was kind of looking for something to re-inspire myself, you know? Like, I was very proud of everything I did with that group, but, like, I just, as an artist, I needed more. I needed to grow as a singer, and my phone rang. It was Rusty, old friend. You know, we had mutual friends, and, man, we got together on the music, and we just, he plays how I sing, and I sing how he plays, and we just started writing music, and, you know, it's just been a constant building process, like, building and rebuilding, and we've enjoyed the process, you know. In 2 years, I wouldn't say any of it was a headache. I think it was, you know, writing and demoing and rewriting and recording and putting out a record. I mean, with the exception of the problem with the record label, so even that I don't care about. You know,
is it a Rocket Science Records?
Yeah, they lost the distribution. And not really my problem, but it is our problem. So
it affects the band.
We're going to figure out how to get our music to the people, you know.
It's really cool when you have people in the crowd that listen to the story. Evan will tell a little short version of the story while we're on stage, and you'll see guys out there that are related. They're guys that got out of prison that are trying to be musicians or whatever, and it inspires them to really, you know, go that extra mile, you know, to try to make our dreams come true.
It sounds funny, but people need role models of all kinds, you know.
Of course, from all walks of life.
You know, and not everybody had all the opportunities, you know what I mean? And some of us have been through really hard things in life, and maybe we appreciate things more than they do because nothing was handed to us. We've had to fight for every inch, you know. And sometimes we've been our own worst enemies, but I think we've both learned along the way a lot about gratitude, about life, about, you know, appreciating every moment of it. I mean, you know, to be walking the path of doing what you love to do, that's the success. It's not about how many people you play in front of.
When you lose your freedom and you get yanked off the street, you don't plan for that. It just happens.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you go from being at the top of your game to probably a 6-by-12-foot cell, and you're locked in there for months on end without any human contact sometimes. And it makes you reevaluate your thinking, you know?
Absolutely.
And then on top of that, the pile on top of that, they were charging me with 2 life sentences. It was bullshit, but they were doing it. I wouldn't cooperate, so I just had to take it and fight and fight and fight on the case. Finally, I settled for 8 years. And it doesn't sound like something anybody would usually be relieved about, but when I took the clean 8 years without cooperation, that was a relief because I could see daylight at the end of the tunnel. I knew someday I'm going to be back on the street.
Yeah.
And at that time, I really appreciated everything that I had before, all that freedom and all that, the clothes, the food, the cars, my family and everything else. I appreciated it like never before because I'd had it all taken away.
Yeah, no shit.
And now I had a new opportunity to get it back. So every day is a gift.
And I like how you translate, you know, that message as well from the slogan from the band, that it's just, it's kind of a fuck you to the world, like 100% pure passion. You know, you guys, and I quote, you know, say it's all about friendship, creativity, and a powerful positive release to our negative energy, which is a really good message, really good also to divulge to the fans, to the metal community, and why not, you know?
It's a brotherhood of metal.
Absolutely, yeah, indeed. How do
metal
you think
music, metal bikes?
How do you think the band actually takes on this social, you know, goal of divulging this message, being a positive influence, if you will?
I think part of it is right on the stage, like telling people you pissed off, you feel the pressure of life. Is it hard for you? You know, do you feel like I feel? Do you wake up pissed off about things? You know, let's get together and let it out right now. Everybody together, sing with me. You know, it's momentary therapy, but people get memories from those things. And I think the other part of it is leading by example, is is, you know, guys like Rusty or guys like me talking about the mistakes we've made in our lives and trying to lead by example, not saying, oh, look, we're rock stars, we're doing drugs and waving guns around at the club because we have some money for the first time because we're fucking stupid idiots. You know, no, we're both guys who've been through shit, been in trouble, on the other side of it now, both saying, hey, man, you don't have to make the same mistakes. You don't have to go to prison to appreciate life. You don't have to OD on drugs and almost die to realize that life is worth living. You know, you can learn from, you can be smart and learn from other people's mistakes. Let the music be your higher power. Let the music lift you up, you know.
And you come from a background, you know, with Biohazard doing those type of lyrics of social protest, you know, standing up for yourself, you know, defending yourself, you know, defending your own rights. And now mixed up with Rusty over here with the same type of lyrics. I mean, this is a powerhouse, if you will, for a message to the metal community. So I'm glad that this happened, this union right here. Very good.
Me too, brother. Me too.
We know by now, amicably left Biohazard in 2011. Here you are with Attica 7, you know, based in L.A. You did say that you're embarking, like we talked about before in the interview, on your own journey of musical and personal reinvention. So have you actually achieved this goal? You know, like, what has changed? What do you want? Still
you know,
something?
Well, I'm always hungry for more, but no, what I said 2 minutes ago is true. To be walking the path, that is the reinvention, to be playing music with my best friend, my best bro. Songs that I feel like help me grow as a singer, help me, you know, more melodic, more dramatic, more theatrical almost, you know. You know, I always had dreams of doing something a little bit bigger, and I love all the music I made in Biohazard, you know what I mean? That's my music.
Yeah, no, of course.
It's on my body. But sometimes for an artist, you can be part of a project and you can take it as far as it can go because it's not just about you, you know. So if you're a football player on a team, it doesn't matter how great you are, if the rest of the team is in a certain mindset that they want to do things a certain way, not good, bad, right, or wrong, just, you know, me, I wanted to keep evolving. I didn't want to keep making the same album. You know, I made Urban Discipline in 1990. I didn't need to make it again. And I think a lot of the fans of Biohazard wanted that, the same thing again and again. And I could shit that stuff out all day long, but it wasn't getting me high anymore. So I felt like, out of respect for my fans, I needed to do something that was going to bring me the passion to be lifting myself up. You know what I mean? That's all.
Oh, no, it makes perfect sense. What's in the future for Attica 7? We'll just keep going the way we're going. It's all positive. It's all up. You know, we're enjoying the ride. What's in the future for Rusty?
Same thing, Attica, the motorcycles, the TV.
You got the Sons of Anarchy, of course.
Yeah.
You were talking about before. We heard you. Season 6, I mean,
yes, I'm working on season 6 right now.
Filming, you're going to have to leave the tour, come back. And
yeah, I got to fly back and forth a few times while we're on the tour, unfortunately. But John and the guys are good with it. They understand, you know.
And what's in the future for Evan?
Man, you know, I got a bunch of projects I'm working on. You know, of course, Attica 7 is, you know, first and foremost here in my metal world. My wife and I are producing a TV show online called Badass Television. It's a counterculture show, real fast cutting, 1 to 2 minute episodes about heavy metal, tattoo culture, cars, motorcycles, hot chicks, just basically like white trash TV. And then on top of all that, my wife is also a pop singer. She's got a music group called The Ex-Girlfriends. You can check them out at TheExGirlfriends.com, and I'm helping her manager produce that group. So between Rusty on Sons, me with Badass, you know, his motorcycle shop, the music group, Attica 7, we're barely sleeping, man. I mean, let's go get some coffee.